welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering shows from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. In this hour, radio horror. Later on, we'll hear Willis Cooper's Quiet Please. But right now, it's Murder at Midnight from July 20th, 1946. Their sixth program in a syndicated series, we hear Sigmund Miller's story, Death's Goblet, with Eric Dressler and John Griggs.
Like a common criminal. And I didn't mean it. You know I didn't.
Oh, stop whining, Gerald. Take your medicine like a man.
What? All right, Harvey. I'll stop. You're responsible for the whole thing. You know you are. And since they can only hang me once, even for two murders...
Midnight. The witching hour when the night is darkest. Our fears the strongest. And our strength at its lowest ebb. Midnight, when the graves gape open and death strikes. How? You'll learn the answer in just a minute in Death's Goblet.
It all began at one of Arthur Cunningham's parties. He always gave a party when he came back from one of his trips abroad. I went there with Gerald, my partner, and his wife, Susan. Beautiful Susan. Did I care for her? People used to say so. But she was too self-centered a woman for me. I like to look at her just as I like to look at anything that's lovely. That was all. As for Gerald, well, he was rich, which was the only reason he was my partner. But suppose I start at the beginning. At the moment we got to the party and Arthur came over.
Well, hello, Harvey. Glad you came.
Wonderful to see you back, Arthur. You know Gerald and his lovely wife, Susan.
Of course. Hello, lovely wife, Gerald.
Nice to see you again, Arthur.
Good trip, Arthur.
Marvelous. And you're just in time for a drink. Let's get away from this mob. Come into the study.
Oh,
I just opened my last bottle of Chateau Albert.
Oh, nice.
Here we are. Oh, well, someone get the glasses out of the cabinet, will you?
Marge parties make me very nervous.
Here we are. Yes. Hi. What an odd goblet this one is.
Oh, put that one back, Susan.
Why, what's wrong, Arthur?
Use any of the others, but not that one.
Oh, I'll be careful of it, if that's what you're worried about.
Well, it's not that. I just don't want you to drink from it.
What's all the mystery about, Arthur?
Well, you'd all think I was mad if I told you. Take a look at it.
It's a very strange-looking glass.
Yes, looks Venetian, possibly from Murano.
It is.
This red spot here on the side.
Yes, it's supposed to be a drop of blood.
Oh, that's very odd. How do you know that?
Well, Gerald, this goblet has a legend. A terrible legend. And of course, none of you will believe it, but the story is that anyone who drinks from this goblet will kill someone.
Oh, that's wonderful. And you believe it?
Why, yes, Gerald. You see, I've had proof.
Good heavens.
I once drank from this goblet.
What?
Arthur, you're joking. You mean that
yes,
you...
Yes, Susan, it was justifiable homicide, but after I drank from it, I did kill someone. Oh. He was a thief and he attacked me, but still, I killed him.
Well, you never told us about that.
It's not anything that I care to remember particularly.
Oh, how terrible for you, Arthur. Where did you get the goblet?
From a murderer. A man who killed his wife. They were auctioning off his estate.
Extraordinary. May I look at the glass, Arthur?
Yes, if you like.
Everyone stared at the goblet in silence as I held it to the light. It had a delicate brown tint, reminding me of old blood, except that it sparkled and glittered. The spot of red did look like a drop of blood about to roll down the side. It seemed ridiculous that this inanimate object could make men commit murder, and yet there was something about it that fascinated me, and suddenly I wanted to drink out of it.
You seem very interested in my goblet, Harvey.
Yes, will you pour some wine in it for me?
What? No, Harvey. This happens to be one superstition I believe. Everyone who has ever put his lips to this goblet has killed. I don't know why it's so, but it is.
Oh, it's silly, of course, but why tempt fate?
Oh, nonsense, Gerald, nonsense. I'm going to drink out of it.
You'll have to pour the wine yourself, Harvey.
All right, I will. Well, here's, health and long life.
No, Harvey, I won't let you.
Oh, why, Susan,
You shouldn't have done that. You've spilled some of Arthur's best burgundy and ruined a good tablecloth.
Oh, it doesn't matter. I'm glad you did it, Susan.
I won't let you or anyone else drink from that glass.
It's strange to get so distressed about a ridiculous legend.
I don't think murder is ridiculous.
You know, I'd like to get rid of it. I was thinking of destroying it.
Well, why don't you just fling it against the fireplace?
No, I can't.
Huh?
I've tried several times, but somehow I couldn't.
Arthur?
Yes?
How about giving it to me?
I'd rather not.
Oh, come on. You want to get rid of it, and I have a fine glass collection. I'd like to add to it. I'll keep it locked up.
You'll be sorry, but if you want it that badly, Harvey, it's yours.
Arthur, please don't give it to him.
Susan, what's the matter with you? You watch over Harvey as if... Well, as if...
As if what, Gerald?
Oh, the whole business is absurd.
Of course it is.
Yes, and if I should drink out of it and commit a murder, that would be the most absurd thing of all. I kept the goblet on the mantelpiece in my library where the lamplight made it glitter. I discovered that the red drop was not paint. It was ingrained in the glass. Oh, very cleverly. One night, both Susan and Gerald were at my home. As we chatted, I got up, went to the mantelpiece, and idly toyed with the goblet.
That goblet? It's the one Arthur
gave... Yes, yes, you remember. He gave it to me.
Why don't you smash it, Harvey? Get rid of it. Ooh, it gives us all the creeps.
Mm. Well, Gerald, you aren't really afraid of a piece of glass, are you?
You don't believe Arthur's story at all, do you, Harvey?
On the contrary, Susan, I do believe it. But not the way you think.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean to say murder is not in the goblet. It's in me, in you, even in Gerald.
Oh, what a silly thing to say, Harvey.
Oh, yes. You don't need a magic goblet to commit a murder. All you have to do is let yourself go. Let go of the civilized controls that tie you up. Why, Gerald, if you had cause, you could murder me or even your lovely wife.
Oh, I couldn't kill a fly.
Oh, but you could if the fly gave you enough trouble. Now, supposing, just as an example, supposing that you discovered that Susan was really in love with me and only married you for your money. Wouldn't that make you want to murder her, Gerald?
Harvey, you're crazy.
That's not very funny, Harvey.
Even you, Susan.
What?
Even though you have a lovely face and exquisite hands, even you could commit murder. Why, there must have been times when you hated Gerald, or only for a moment, of course. But in that moment... In that moment, if you were not so civilized...
Stop it, Harvey.
Why, you could even put your lovely hands around my throat.
Oh, stop it, Harvey. You're not that important to her. And then just why are we on this gruesome subject?
That's Harvey's idea of humor.
Susan looked at me, a touch of red at the point where the cheekbones make the skin taut. She seemed angry, but she wasn't really. Oh, yes, she loved me. I could see it in her face. She looked at me for a moment and then dropped her eyes.
May I look at the goblet, Harvey?
No, I'm afraid not, Susan. You might accidentally drop it.
It might be a good idea.
Well, I have an even better one, Gerald. And that's to go home before we get really serious about this murder business.
I sat there staring at the goblet after they left. It fascinated me, glittering in the lamplight. And as I looked at it, it almost seemed as if the red spot of blood was moving, rolling down its side. Why shouldn't I drink from it? Why? And before I knew it, I'd taken it down and put it on the table. I got a bottle of burgundy, opened it, and I poured slowly, filling the goblet just up to the red spot. And then I drank from it. Seemed to me that the wine had a different taste, although I had drunk this wine often and knew its taste well. It was delicious. I had another. It was heady, and it made me a little dizzy, although I felt fine and free. Yes, light and dizzy. But after a while, when the dizziness wouldn't go away, I decided to go for a drive, even though it was close to midnight. I drove fast. The
speed and power of the car gave me a feeling of great exhilaration. I took the turns at full speed, enjoying the danger of the sharp curve. Then I came to a long, level stretch of road. I pressed down hard on the gas. The needle of the speedometer slowly moved upward. 60, 70, 80, 85. The road, like a black ribbon, rolled up in front of me. And then I suddenly saw him, but it was too late. I struck him with my right fender. He never made a sound. The car swerved a little from the impact. My heart in my throat. I stopped. Then I backed up. Backed up to where the body was lying sprawled grotesquely on the edge of the road. One look was enough. He was dead. But no one had seen the accident. I stepped on the gas and drove off. I knew now that the story of the goblet wasn't a myth, and I also knew what I was going to do about it. The next night, I got Gerald to come to my house to do some work.
Oh, I can't make head or tail out of your cost estimates, Harvey.
Oh, now, really, Gerald, it's very simple. Just concentrate.
Oh, why can't you take care of it like a good fellow? I'm awfully tired.
Well, all right, let's stop for a couple of minutes. Have a drink.
What are you doing, Harvey? The goblet.
Why, you don't really believe that story of Arthur's, do you?
Well,
you're much too intelligent for that. Mm. Well, you only pretended in front of Susan, didn't you?
Well, I... Oh, yes. Had to pretend, you know, women.
Well, of course. And even if you did believe it, I have a feeling that... Basically, you're pretty reckless, aren't you?
Used to be pretty wild when I was a young fella. On a motorcycle once.
Yes, I know, yes. Well, let's drink up. Find me a victim, will you, Gerald?
Huh?
Well, you know, according to the legend, I've got to murder someone. Maybe even you.
Harvey the murderer.
Yes. Very nice wine. How about another?
Right.
Well, here's to your lovely wife. And how about switching glasses?
Huh?
Well, you might as well get a kick out of it, too.
Well, okay. Here goes.
I watched the fool swagger as he drank down the wine. In an hour, when he was alone, he'd be shivering with fright at what he'd done.
Well, I did it.
You certainly did. By the way, Gerald.
Yes?
I checked Arthur's story about this goblet.
Yeah?
And it seems that he's right. Everyone who ever put his lips to this goblet has committed a murder.
You mean...
Well, of course, it's all coincidence, but... Then again, who knows? All the next week, I kept reminding Gerald about his drinking from the goblet. I wasn't really trying to get him to kill, but it was amusing to see him get upset and uneasy. And I noticed he was getting a little bolder, particularly with Susan, and had developed a temper. And one night, just as I was about to retire...
Hello, is that you, Harvey?
Yes, Susan, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine. I'm just a little worried about Gerald. He usually gets home at about 6, and it's 11 o'clock now. Do you know where he might be?
Why, he's having dinner with his sister.
Sister?
Yes, a tall, dark girl. She was in the office today, and...
Harvey, Gerald has no sisters.
Oh, he hasn't?
No.
Oh, I guess I got him mixed up with someone else. Yes, it was Les Gordon who was meeting his sister. Yes, Gerald had some business to take care of over in Milford.
You're not very good at covering up, Harvey. I'm coming right over. Please wait up for me.
Good. Things were beginning to happen. It was becoming very interesting. Now we'd see.
Harvey, I want you to tell me everything. I must know. Who is this girl?
Take it easy, Susan. Come, sit down.
Oh, never mind that. What about Gerald?
I don't know anything about Gerald's private life. And besides, you're not the one to talk.
What on earth do you mean?
You know perfectly well what I mean. You don't really care for Gerald. Actually, you're in love with me.
Harvey.
Well, you are, aren't you?
Maybe. Sometimes I think I am. Oh, but you're too cold-blooded. I'd never be sure I could trust you.
As a matter of fact, you'd like to get rid of Gerald.
What? Why do you say that?
Well, I'm just putting your thoughts into words. You never really loved him, did you?
Oh, but Harvey...
And he's finally become unbearable, hasn't he?
Oh, Harvey, if you only knew...
Do you know that the last time Gerald was here, he drank out of that goblet of Arthur's? It's possible that he wants to get rid of you, too.
Oh, stop it! Stop it, you hear?
Well, I'm just telling you what I think you ought to know.
Oh, we'll see. I left word at home that Gerald was to meet me here. And if he does come, well, we'll see.
We sat and waited, not talking much. Susan's face was pale and agitated. It was most exciting. Susan, with all her charm and embellishments, was really a fierce animal underneath. I could almost hear her rage seething.
Are you expecting anyone?
Just Gerald.
Well, let him in.
Oh, hello, Harvey. Susan, what's up? Why did you leave word to meet you here?
It's almost midnight. Where have you been all the evening?
At Milford.
With whom?
What's going on, anyway? What are you so excited about, Susan?
What were you doing in Milford?
Why, I went there on business.
Oh, really? You've been behaving very strangely lately, Gerald. If you don't love me, why don't you say so like a man?
What? This is all your fault, Harvey. You've been filling her head with poison.
I had nothing to do with this. I told her that you went to Milford.
All he did was to make me see clearly something I've felt for a long while. And I think this is the time to do something about it.
Oh, are you out of your mind? Put that gun down.
You remember it, don't you? You gave it to me. Said it might be useful in an emergency.
Harvey, take that gun away from her. She's liable to shoot.
She won't shoot. She's only trying to frighten you.
Am I? Let's see.
Oh, my shoulder. Give me that gun. Give it
to
me. Harvey. She's dead.
Yes, Gerald. And you killed her.
But it was an accident. She shot at me, and I was only trying to get the gun away from her. You know that's what happened.
I only know that you drank from that goblet and that you killed her.
What? But... Oh, you... You dirty, treacherous... You planned all this so that you could get rid of me. So that you could have Susan. So you could have the firm for yourself.
You'll have to do better than that to beat the gallows, Gerald.
The gallows? Please, Harvey. We've been friends for a long time. You can't let me down.
You wouldn't have pressed the trigger if you hadn't had murder in your heart, Gerald. You shot her because you wanted to. That's what I saw. I believe in telling the truth.
Harvey, I'll turn over the business to you. I'll do anything, anything, if you'll just...
I don't accept bribes, Gerald.
All right. But I'll fool you. I'll call the police myself.
Well, there's the phone.
I'll prove my case in court. They won't convict me. Operator. Operator, give me the police. Hello? Police department? This is Gerald Hamilton. I just accidentally shot my wife. And my friend's home. Yes, she's dead. The address is 411 Grove Street. That's right. I killed her. Accidentally. Yes. I'll be waiting here.
Cigarette, Gerald?
Oh, treating me like a condemned man, huh? Well, I'm not going to die. All I have to do is tell the truth about everything, including you.
Oh, but you forget, Gerald, there must be fingerprints, your fingerprints on that gun. That won't look very accidental, will it?
But Harvey...
You did it, Gerald. I saw you.
If you don't back me up, they'll hang me like a common criminal. Please, Harvey, don't let them do that to me, please.
Oh, stop whining, Gerald.
What? All right, Harvey, I'll stop. You're responsible for this whole thing. You know you are. And since they can only hang me once...
You raised the gun, but I'd been expecting it. I grabbed his hand, pushed it against his chest. My finger pressed on his and on the trigger. And suddenly, he went limp.
You won't get away.
My alibi was perfect. All I had to do was wait for the police that he himself had called. Minutes ticked slowly away, and then...
Hello, Harvey.
Arthur.
Glad I found you in. Say, you look as if you'd been in a fight.
Arthur, you'd better not come in.
Why? What's the matter?
No, you'd better not come in.
Well, but why?
Well, Gerald and Susan, they had a quarrel, and he killed her.
What?
And then he shot himself.
What are you talking about, Harvey?
Well, all right, come in. Look for yourself.
Good Lord.
Well, tried to kill me, too.
But why? It doesn't sound like him or like either of them.
Well, I don't know why. Fit of insanity? Or maybe it was the goblet. Your goblet. He drank out of it, you know.
The goblet? Why, that's ridiculous.
As he spoke, he picked up the gun. It made me furious. All those fine fingerprints of Gerald's were now erased. Put that gun down, Arthur. There are fingerprints on it.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize.
I tried to get hold of myself. The stupid fool, he was going to ruin everything. But I had to keep calm. What were you saying about the goblet?
Why, it has no curse or magic. I just made that story up.
You made it... You mean...
Of course, I bought the goblet in an antique shop. As a matter of fact, I have a whole set of them.
The pulses hammered away in my head. A vast, uncontrollable anger seized me. Was it because of those precious fingerprints that he'd wiped out, or because I had believed in the goblet myself? I don't know. I only know that I had to fight to keep from grabbing him by the throat.
You know... I don't think you're telling me everything you know about this horrible business, Harvey. In fact...
A red-hot wave came over me. I don't remember exactly what happened.
Let me go! Get your hands off me! Oh.
Arthur's body is lying there, too, now. Next to Susan's and Gerald's. But the police will be here any minute, so I have to hurry. First, the goblet. There. That's done. No. Some of the broken fragments still glitter in the lamplight. I've got to crush them. Grind them to powder under my heel. But there are always other pieces that I can't find. They're hiding from me. They're afraid of me. But I'll find every piece. I'll find them. I'll find them. I'll find them.
Three bodies lying huddled on the floor, and the madman crushing the fragments of the broken goblet to powder. As the police car drives up and the clock strikes 12 for
murder.
Murder at Midnight from the 20th of July, 1946 on Tuned to Yesterday, that recording a syndicated broadcast. This is an hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVonier, and now a popular show on the Mutual Broadcasting System in its day, It's Quiet Please, from the mind and pen of Willis Cooper. We hear a May 10th, 1948 broadcast next, starring Ernest Chappell, Ellen Sparrow, and Ed Latimer, and the story, There Are Shadows Here.
Quiet Please. Quiet, please. The Mutual Broadcasting System presents Quiet, Please, which is written and directed by Willis Cooper, and which features Ernest Chappell. Quiet Please for tonight is called There Are Shadows Here.
Look at my hands. They're trembling like a leaf. And there's nothing I can do to stop it either. Well, there's
if you've been through what I've been through. Last week, last Wednesday, I come into Tim's bar. I sit down on a stool. I say, I'll have a Scotch Mist, Patty.
Oh, hiya, Woody.
Scotch Mist, Patty.
Scotch Mist. Hey, there's a lady in here looking for you.
Lady?
Yeah. What kind of scotch?
Got any Glenlivet?
No, just White Horse and Vat 69. Maybe there's a little less in the Hague bottle. Yeah, a lady looking for you.
Who was she?
I don't know. I never seen her. Tim told me about her.
When was she here, Patty?
A while ago.
Well, what'd she want?
I don't know. She was just looking for you. Scotch Mist.
Well, didn't she say what she wanted?
Just wanted you. Is that stuff good?
Yeah, it's all right. Why?
I was just wondering. I never tasted it.
Don't you ever take a drink, Patty?
Me? Oh, I never take a drink. Except ginger beer. And you can't get that anymore.
That's so?
Comes in little stone jugs. Crocs, like.
Funny about that woman.
Yeah, I sure used to like ginger beer. I think Tim said her name was Esther.
Esther? I didn't know any Esther.
Esther, Hester, Lester. Something like that.
Esther, huh?
Yeah. Esther, Hester, Lester. I don't know.
Well, if she was good looking.
Tim didn't know.
What?
Tim said he didn't see her face, see? You don't know her, huh?
Well, I don't think so. It's funny.
Dames. You want another of them things?
Yeah, I'll have another.
Oh, sure wish I could get some ginger beer. Used to drink it up in Canada. Marlborough Hotel in Winnipeg. Drink it with a quart.
I wonder who it could have been.
Who?
The woman that was looking for me.
Oh, I don't know. Scotch Mist.
Yeah, thanks. Esther, huh?
Yeah, that's what Tim said.
I don't know any Esther.
Well, she knows you. Woody, she says. That's your name, ain't it?
Sure.
I could give her your phone number.
No, no, don't do that.
Okay.
If she comes in again, tell her to leave her phone number. I could call her up.
Yeah. I'll tell Tim.
Hey.
Yeah?
How come Tim didn't see her face, Patty?
Oh, it's always dark in here. Always shadows in here.
Oh.
Shadows set you nuts sometimes.
Yeah?
Yeah. Good thing I don't drink nothing but ginger beer. Even if I could get it. You drink, and these here shadows set you nuts.
Yeah, it is dark in here.
Oh, that Tim. Look at them shadows, Woody. That there one in the corner by the cannibal's head. Don't it look like the cannibal's head is making faces at you? Look now.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks funny.
I'm in here all alone. It pretty near sets me nuts. There's one there by the second booth, you see? Looks like a big black cat.
You got a terrific imagination, Patty.
There's one under the bar here.
Huh?
Every time I stoop down to pick up a beer glass, I jump. Looks like a hand reaching out for me. Makes me jump.
Well, I'll say it's a good thing you don't drink.
Nothing but ginger beer. I go nuts.
Well, I'm going to get out of here before I go nuts, too.
Okay. $1.30. Uh-huh.
And a dime for you, Patty.
Oh, much obliged. If she comes in again, I'll tell her you was here. Shadows. Every place you go, the shadows.
When did I say that was? Last Wednesday. The things that can happen in less than a week. Look at my hands. I can't stop shaking. Patty and his shadows. I said to myself, I'm not going to Tim's anymore. There's a bar in the hotel where I can drink my scotch, miss, and not have him mumbling in my ear all the time. I got to thinking about Shadows, though, myself. I was sitting in the Italian place waiting for my lasagna and stuff and wondering if I should order a bottle of wine. There was a candle on the table. There was a little draft in the room. The flame was jumping up and down. And the shadows on the wall. It doesn't take much imagination to see things in the shadows, does it? Game everybody plays. You want a little bit of advice, though, friend? Don't do it. Huh? Oh, I'll tell you. First thing, I found myself making shadows on the wall with my hands. A rabbit, old man waggling his beard. Owl. Know how you get fascinated with that kind of stuff? The waiter must have thought I was crazy. I know he did when I jumped up and knocked the table over with all the dishes on.
Hey, what's the matter with you, mister? You sick?
What made that shadow?
What a shadow? I see you making with the hands from the shadows on the wall.
Well, I didn't make that shadow.
What a shadow you talk.
There was the shadow of a woman there.
Oh, you talk a crazy, mister. There wasn't been no woman here for 2 weeks. Not since Esther got mad and quit.
Esther? Who's she?
She's a waitress here the last week, and she quit. The boss is saying he's not going to have no woman in this place and never. Especially not that.
I ordered the bottle of wine and I drank it. Because I'm telling you, I did see the shadow of a woman's head on the wall next to me. And I'm also telling you, I didn't have anything to do with it. All right, think whatever you want to. I tell you, I saw it. And Esther, too. Yeah, what do you think of that, my friend? Well, let me go on. I went home. I went to bed. Sure, of course I dreamed about shadows. What'd you expect? Well, I live in a hotel, as I said, all by myself in a little room on the 8th floor. I didn't think I was going to get to sleep, but I did. I read a while. I left the light on in the bathroom. Didn't go for the dark, you see. I woke up in the middle of the night, thirsty from all that wine I drank. I started to get up and go to the bathroom for a drink of water. As I sat up in bed, see, there was a square of light on the wall opposite my bed from the bathroom light. And right in the middle of that patch of light, there was a shadow. The shadow of a woman, just standing there. Not doing anything, just standing there. And the darndest thought came into my mind, scared as I was. I didn't get out of bed at first. I just sat there and I said, Esther? And there wasn't any answer. And I tried it again. Esther?
Yes?
Ever feel your hair actually stand on end? Well, it does, all right. Mine did. And I managed to speak again. I said, what do you want, Esther?
Will you come with me?
And the shadow sort of stretched out its arms to me in a gesture that was like a little girl. And yet it wasn't. It was, I don't know how to say it. Like someone who was in love with me. Someone that I loved. Oh, I can't explain it. I got up and threw my robe around me and I walked toward the light. The shadow moved, too. It moved toward the door of the room. The door that leads out into the hall. The shadow's hands touched the doorknob. I looked to see who it was that was casting the shadow. And I tell you, I was alone in that room. Yes, sir, I was alone in the room. I turned back to the door just as the shadow seemed to kind of melt into the wood. And then seemed to go on through the locked door. And I reached for the door and opened it. The shadow was moving down the hall toward the stairway beyond the velvet elevators, and there wasn't a soul in the hallway. Well, I tell you, there wasn't. The hall's brightly lighted, and all there was this woman's shadow gliding away from me along the wall. I stood there with my mouth hanging open. And just as the shadow reached the end of the hall, it stopped and put out its arms again.
Will you come with me?
And I slammed the door shut, turned all the other lights in my room off, and I stuck my head under the cold shower. I was scared to death. And you know what? There was a smell of perfume in the room. Russia leather. I remember it from a girl I used to know in New York that always used it. And believe me, brother, I haven't got any Russia leather perfume in my room. But I smelled it. Plain. Well, all right, maybe somebody's playing tricks on me. But if you can tell me how to play that one, brother, I'll put in with you. Listen, I was riding down in the elevator the next morning with Frankie, the wise kid that runs the car. You know what he did? Listen.
Hey, Woody.
Huh?
You stink swell.
What?
Perfume. I didn't know that about you.
What are you talking about?
Sure smells expensive. Where'd you get it?
You trying to kid me, Frankie?
Oh, goodness, no.
And I could smell it myself then. Russia leather. Well? I don't know why I ever go to Tim's. It's dark in there, and Patty... Well, you know Patty. Yeah, he gets you down mumbling. Always mumbling about the shadows. And that's where I first heard about Esther, too. It's a depressing place. So...
Scotch, Miss Woody?
Yeah.
I don't see why you drink these things. We had some ginger beer now. But you can't get it. Why do you drink these things?
I like them.
Tim says your girl was in here again today.
Who?
This Esther, whatever her name is. She was in, Tim says.
When?
Today. She asked for you.
What did you tell her?
I didn't tell her anything. It was Tim that seen her. Or rather, he didn't see her.
Why didn't he see her?
The shadows, you know.
Yeah. He didn't see her face to face then?
Just kind of like a shadow.
I see. What'd she want?
You, he said, she said. Wanted you to go someplace with her.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I know. You, want another scotch mist?
Yeah, I guess so. Patty.
Sir?
Do you believe in ghosts?
Yes.
Oh.
Scotch me. Sure, you work around a place like this as long as I have. You believe in anything. These here shadows. There was a fella murdered here once when it was a speak. Fella hit a fella with a chair.
Yeah?
Yeah. If you see over there on the end of the back bar, that's one leg of the chair. Tim always likes to keep these here souvenirs. I don't care much about them.
Yeah, I shouldn't think you would.
No, them things is haunted, see? Boy, you ought to be here sometimes late at night when I'm alone.
Why?
The things that happen. Hey, give me the willies.
What things, Patty?
Oh, shadows and things. Scare you right out of your year's growth. You know what, for instance?
What?
These here shadows, Woody. Nothing worse than a shadow.
You're telling me.
Unless it's not a shadow.
What do you mean?
Well, there's people that don't have no shadow, see?
You know what I think, Patty?
What?
I think either you or me is crazy.
Huh. Or maybe it's both of us. What makes you think so?
Talking this way.
Yeah? What are you scared of?
Who says I'm scared?
What's your hands trembling for that way?
Well, I drink too much.
It ain't that kind of trembles, Woody.
It is, too.
Wait a minute.
Huh?
Don't look now.
What?
Right behind you. Take it easy now. There's a shadow on the wall behind you, Woody.
Cut it out.
There's a shadow of a woman on the wall right behind you, Woody. And there ain't nothing that's making that shadow.
A woman?
Yeah. A woman looking right at you. Go ahead. Turn around and look.
And I turned around slowly on my stool. I looked at the wall where Patty was pointing. I looked hard.
Patty, you're crazy. Isn't any shadow there?
There's two.
There is not. I'll go show you. Now, you see? It's my overcoat here on the bench.
Where's that perfume all come from?
Hello, Frankie.
Hiya, Woody. Hard day at the office?
Yeah, not especially.
Oh, you just look kind of peaking.
Well, I feel all right.
You in love, maybe?
What?
Who was the babe looking for you?
Babe? Looking for me?
Yeah, a little while ago.
I don't know any babes, Frankie. What'd she look like?
Don't kid me, Woody.
I'm not, I tell you.
Hey, Clark. Hey, Clark.
Listen, Frankie.
Yeah?
Listen, there is a woman that's been looking for me. I don't know who she is.
You in a jam?
Yes.
Well, I didn't see her, Woody, honest. I was just closing the doors to run up to the 12th to pick up the old guy with the teeth, you know. And I saw her just a second. She asked for you, and the old guy was punching the brother. You know how he does. And all I saw was a kind of a shadow, see?
A shadow?
Yeah, kind of, you know. Hey!
What?
That perfume I was kidding you about this morning.
Well?
She had some of it on, too. Does that make you think of anybody?
Yes, Frankie. Yes, it does make me think of somebody. Much obliged, Frankie.
Huh?
Who is it?
Me, Patty. Is that you, Woody?
What are you doing here, Patty?
I come to visit you.
Well, come in.
Hey, has she been here, Woody?
Who?
You know who I mean. This Esther, whoever she is.
She was here.
You see her?
No.
Good.
Patty, what is this?
It's ascending.
Of what?
Ascending, like they used to have in the old country. My grandpa used to tell me about it.
I don't know what you're talking about.
She's after you. She's come to get you. Now listen, did she ask you to come with her?
Yes, she did. Last night.
Oh, man.
How do you know so much about all this, Patty?
I know a lot of things you ain't got any idea I know. My grandpa was born with a caul.
What?
A caul. A thing on his head. Look, I know what I'm talking about, Woody. I'm going to make her go away.
Patty, listen.
No, you listen. I know what I'm talking about.
Is she a real woman?
She's a shadow.
Patty, if you're playing a dirty trick
Woody,
on me...
I was never more serious in my life.
Well, what are we going to do?
You watch, and you do just like I say.
Well,
Turn off the lights.
Patty,
Turn off the lights.
Well,
go on.
And I turn off the lights in the room, feeling like another idiot. Patty and I sat down in the darkness to wait. And we waited. And waited. And at last I heard a noise. A faint, strange, uncanny noise. I whispered, Patty. There was no other sound. And it was fully 5 minutes before I realized that the sound that had set my hair stand on end again was Patty snoring. And so I got up and turned the lights on again and kicked Patty out and went to bed. Well, maybe I dreamed it, maybe I didn't. But somewhere in the darkness, I heard the sound of someone stirring in my room. And a voice.
Woody. Woody. Come with me.
And I awoke. And the scent of her perfume was heavy in the room. would be last Thursday, wouldn't it? Well, the next night I came straight home and Patty was in my room waiting.
I tell you, Woody, you're in danger.
And so we sat late again, Patty with a curious collection of books and implements that he said would get rid of the sending for once and all. But there was no sending. Patty stayed all night with me, and we heard no sound, saw no shadows, smelled no perfume. But there was dust on the shelf of my bathroom. And when morning came, Patty showed me something scrawled in the dust by a finger. A woman's finger, if I'm any judge. It was just one word. A name. Esther. Maybe Patty did that himself, maybe not. I didn't know what he was up to. I can't get away from the fact that there is someone named Esther who wants to see me, whose shadow I have seen, whose voice I have heard. Someone who leaves the scent of Russia leather behind her, who scrawls her name in the dust. In the dust. That's curious, isn't it? Dust. Saturday night and Sunday night. Now, Patty and I sit again in the dark waiting. This time, I know something's going to happen. Patty says you'll send her back where she came from. Send her back alone.
It can be done, Woody. All you have to know is the secrets like my grandpa knew. And they've got all this stuff right here. Only thing is, maybe she knows. And she won't come whilst I'm here.
Yeah, we see, Patty, but I'm telling you something that better happen. But at the end of my string.
If she comes, she'll go, Woody.
I hope so.
Yes, sir. Shadows are terrible things. And the only other thing that's worse is for a man not to have a shadow.
Well, how could that be?
How could there be a shadow without anything for it to be a shadow of?
Yes.
Shh, quiet.
It's late. It's past midnight, I think, and I'm so sleepy I can hardly keep my eyes open. Patty, are you awake?
Yeah.
And the little light from the bathroom casts its square of light on the green wall alongside the dresser. And I can just barely hear the traffic in the street below, a night owl taxi, somebody yelling a goodbye at a belated friend, and...
Be still, Woody.
What?
Looky, the wall.
And I look at the wall, and there is a shadow in the square of light on the green wall alongside the dresser. And there is a tang of Russia leather in the air. And the shadow stretches out its arms to me.
It's time for us to go.
And I find myself getting up from my chair. And the shadowy arms are about to take me. And I hear Patty muttering something, and he seems so far away. The arms are still reaching for me. Suddenly, there's Patty's voice again, loud, real in the room.
Turn on the lights!
Of course, I'll turn the lights on, Patty. And I do turn on the lights, and it's just a room again. And the shadow is still there. The arms are still reaching out for me, and the shadow starts towards the door. Suddenly, Patty screams again.
Woody! Your shadow's gone!
Shadow is gone. So it is. And I follow the other shadow, Esther's shadow, to the door, and I open the door. And I follow the shadow out into the hall and down the hall. And it seems so odd to be walking along in the light and there's no shadow for me. And the elevator door is open. And I walk in, and the shadow glides in ahead of me. And there's a woman standing there at the back of the elevator. The shadow just seems to melt into her figure. I look at her and I say, Esther? She looks back at me as if she never saw me in her whole life. The elevator jerks suddenly. It starts to plunge faster and faster down the shaft. She turns horrified eyes to me and she screams. And I know the sending is completed. Nestor and I are done with shadows forever.
Tonight was called There Are Shadows Here. It was written and directed by Willis Cooper. The man who spoke to you was Ernest Chappell.
And Alan Sparrow was Esther. Patty was played by Ed Latimer. The writer was Sid Cassell. And Frank Thomas was Frankie. As usual, music for Quiet Please is played by Albert Berman. Now, word from our good friend, Bill Cooper.
Nobody living or dead was even hinted at in tonight's Quiet Please story. I thought up the characters and the story without any outside stimulus at all. Next week's Quiet Please will be called Gem of Purest Ray.
And so, until next week at the same time, I am quietly yours, Ernest Chappell.
Quiet Please, on Tuned to Yesterday, part of Mutual Radio's Wednesday night lineup at 8:30 from May 10th, 1948. And that wraps up this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVanier. Thanks for listening.